Hi, I'm former Vice President Al Gore, and I'm here to speak the truth, even though it might be inconvenient. Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but you don't need to be spiteful. So hot, there's no chance of snow. Told you so, told you so, told you so. Because of this global warming, the North Pole is now transforming. Santa's suit is too hot, and so when he goes, wears a low-rise Speedo. No, the weather is not the norm. It's reversing the natural law. Teddy Kennedy's daiquiri's warm, and Hillary's starting to thaw. The planet is slowly dying. I'm serious, I'm not lying. Coastal flooding will start to grow. Told you so, told you so, told you so. But Florida's first to go. Let it go, let it go, let it go. I'm serious.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Coming up next, Climate Change and Conflict with Steve Curwood and Edward Miguel.
I'm Steve Curwood. As global temperatures rise, so do the levels of domestic violence, crime, and armed conflict, according to the journal Science. Decades ago, Thomas Homer Dixon linked conflict in poor countries to scarcity of water and croplands. There were many other studies, but none quantified how global warming might affect conflict over the entire planet. Now, a meta-study that delved into more than 60 previous studies from a variety of disciplines has found just how much more violence is linked to increased warming. Co-author Edward Miguel, an economics professor at the University of California, Berkeley, explains.
Our study in Science examines a range of other studies that have looked at the relationship between climate and violence. And we look at violence at a range of scales, everything from crime rates in the U.S. all the way up to civil war in Africa and crime in other parts of the world. And the main conclusion of the study is we find a very strong relationship. In periods of extreme climate, like very hot temperatures, like the heat wave going through Europe this year, for example, we find increases in violence. Violent crime, civil war, riots, and it's a very robust relationship.
Please give me a recent example of a place where crime or violence increased with increased temperature.
Definitely. There's been a lot of research recently on the link between hot temperatures and violence in sub-Saharan Africa. That's a region that's my own personal research focus. There are findings showing that in periods of very high temperatures and also low rainfall, there's an increase in civil war risk. There's an increase in rioting and other forms of political instability. Sub-Saharan Africa is a region that already has a very high baseline rate of political instability. So increased warming, like on the order of 2 degrees Celsius, could increase that to very, very high levels of violence.
How about the United States?
We also looked at studies that look at crime in the United States. And so if you look at cities, for instance, that have anomalously high temperatures in a given month, they tend to have more violent crime, more murder, more assault.
What about India? In recent years, there have been some searing heat waves there. What results have you seen there?
Yeah, there are also studies from India. There's a fascinating recent study that looks at violence at a different scale. They look at domestic violence, and they find that in regions that are experiencing very hot temperatures, you see a rise in domestic violence against women. You know, this is obviously very tragic finding, and it really illustrates that this link between high temperature and violence holds at all different scales, from within the home to the streets of our cities, all the way up to society-wide civil war.
So tell me about the quantifiable data you have that links crime and temperature increase.
Yeah, there's actually two sets of numbers. So the first thing we did is conceptually divide up the data sets into those data sets that look at group-level violence, like civil war or rioting. And then we separately looked at violence that we call interpersonal violence, and those are mainly the crime data sets. And just to give you a sense of what the magnitudes are, the sort of estimated average effect of 2 degrees Celsius warming in tropical Africa on the risk of civil war in Africa would be something on the order of 40 to 50% increase in the risk of civil war.
What about a 2 degrees centigrade rise in temperature regarding domestic or personal violence?
So when we look at that number, the magnitudes aren't as large, but they're still statistically significant. So a rise of 2 degrees Celsius in temperature in the United States would be associated with something like a 5 or 6% increase in violent crime in the United States. Now, if you count up the total number of violent crimes that would lead to, we're talking about many, many thousands of additional violent crimes in the United States each year.
So why do you suppose this trend is so predictable everywhere around the world?
You know, there's a number of different reasons. There's two main mechanisms or channels that scholars have written about. One is a fundamental, you could think of it as a physiological channel, which is at higher temperatures, people become more aggressive. Now, there's a second set of explanations that are very important in low-income regions of the world, like in South Asia or Sub-Saharan Africa or parts of Latin America. Most people are engaged in agriculture, subsistence agriculture, and they don't typically irrigate their crops. So when the rains fail and crops fail, people lose their income and become desperate. And that's a very plausible explanation in our view for why you see a rise in organized political violence in, say, African countries following a drought.
What interest has the military and the intelligence community had in your research?
They've been very interested in this as a national security issue. So if you think back to some of the critical parts of the world for U.S. foreign policy, whether they're in the Horn of Africa or whether it's in South Asia like Pakistan, those are parts of the world where the relationship between high temperatures and violence is very well documented, and the military command is quite concerned that rising temperatures will lead to even more political instability.
Ted Miguel, this trend is nothing new. You also looked at ancient civilizations in your research. Can you tell me about that?
What we found is a very strong link between extreme climate historically and civilization collapse. The classical Maya civilization in the Yucatan, that between 800 and 900 AD, they experienced multiple multi-year mega droughts. And at the end of the third of those mega droughts, the civilization collapsed, never to recover its previous glory. There's similar findings in China. Several Chinese dynasties have also collapsed. So really throughout the world, a number of major civilizations have met their end following adverse climate. And I think that's something that we need to be very aware of as we look forward to the predicted global warming over the next half century.
Climate scientists generally agree that we are looking at least an average temperature rise of 2 degrees centigrade over the next 50 years or so. That's a little less than 4 degrees Fahrenheit. What does that say to you in terms of our ability to adapt and continue to get along with each other?
That's one of the million-dollar questions lurking in the background is over the next 30, 40, 50 years, if temperatures do increase globally 2 degrees Celsius, how much will societies be able to adapt to those changes? So for instance, will police forces in the U.S. start recognizing this link between high temperature and violence and do something about it? Or will there be new crop varieties developed for India or Africa that are more drought resistant? If we look historically, however, we find that there's typically been quite limited adaptation to climate changes. So we very much think that further investments and policy changes around adaptation are a key priority to make sure that we don't suffer all the violence that our paper predicts could occur with the temperature rise.
Edward Miguel is an economics professor at the University of California at Berkeley. Thanks so much for taking the time with me today, Ted.
Thanks, Steve.
Hear great speeches and interviews at AXA Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Well, I'm going to preach all a sermon about old man Adam, and I don't mean the Adam in the Bible, Adam. No, I don't mean the Adam that Mother Eve made it. I mean the thing that science liberated. Thing that Einstein says he's scared of, and when Einstein's scared, brother, I'm scared. Well, if you're scared of the A-bomb, here's what you got to do. You got to gather all the people in the world with you, because if we don't get together and do it, well, the first thing you know, we'll blow this world plumb to Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Alamogordo, Bikini. Now life used to be such a simple joy. The cyclotron was just a super toy, and folks got born, they'd work and marry, and atom was a word in the dictionary. And then it happened. And the science boys from every clime, they all pitched in with overtime, and before they knew it, the job was done, and they'd hitched up the power of the gall-darned sun and put a harness on old Sol, splitting atoms, while the diplomats was a-splitting hairs. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Alamogordo, The Adams International, in spite of hysteria, flourishes in Utah and in Siberia. And whether you're black, white, red, or brown, the question is this when you boil it down. To be or not to be, that's the question. And the answer to it all ain't military datum, like who gets there fastest with the mostest atoms. No, the people of the world must decide their fate. They gotta stick together or disintegrate. We hold this truth to be self-evident, that all men may be cremated equal. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, bloody up the flu. Alamogordo, Bikini, it could happen to you. Yes, it's up to the people, because the Adam don't care, and you can't fence him in, he's just like air, and he doesn't give a hoot about any politics or who got what into whichever fix, because all he wants to do is just sort of set around and have his nucleus bombarded by neutrons. So the moral is this, just as plain as day, that old man Adam is here to stay. He's gonna stick around, that's clear to see, but ah, my dearly beloved, are we? So listen, folks, here is my thesis. Peace in the world, or the world in pieces. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Alamogordo, Bikini.
Raised in Gifu, on the islands of Japan. He was sent off to Manchuria, that's how this tale began. For his next assignment in the diplomatic corps was far off Lithuania and the European war. My grandfather was from Krakow, the Nazis came, he fled. He took his family to Vilnius, so they might not end up dead. But the panzers were advancing, and he knew they had to go. But he had to have a visa, and all the embassies said no. There was only one final possibility. The last consulate left open, the Third Reich's Asian ally. There in Lithuania, there was no time to lose. They came asking for a visa, thousands of Polish Jews. The diplomat called Tokyo, can I grant them this reprieve? Three times he got his answer, tell them all to leave. He looked into their eyes, talked to his family. He and his wife decided, we must set these people free. Although I never met him, when all is said and done, I am Sugihara's son. Disobeying orders that they knew to be wrong, Senpo and Yukiko started writing all day long. A month's worth of visas in every 20-hour day. Senpo and Yukiko could turn no refugee away. Word came from the empire, it's time to turn it in. You're closing down your consulate and moving to Berlin. They knew they did the right thing, of this they had no doubt. They threw visas through the window as their train pulled out. Although I never met him, when all is said and done, I am Sugihara's son. Thank you. mother crossed Siberia for 5 times the normal cost, fearing for the future with every minute lost. He got the ferry to Kobe, then to occupied Shanghai. There he spent the war years while back home his people died. Sugihara-san did not seek praise from anyone. When he died, the papers said his neighbors knew not what he'd done. But there are 40,000 people living lives today. Without Senpo Sugihara, I'd not be here now to say. Although I never met him, when all is said and done, I am Sugihara's son.
Masses, just like witches at black masses, evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction, in the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. This world stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour, day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling, begging mercies for the sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Thank you. need to laugh, and when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love and it's a sunny day.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
We take a walk, the sun is shining down, burns my feet as they touch the ground.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
Then we lie beneath a shady tree. I love her and she's loving me. She feels good, she knows she's looking fine. I'm so proud to know that she is mine.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
I That's all, folks.